Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. So let's take a look at some current news on grain and the Ukraine. It's been reported that Russia, Ukraine, Turkey, and the UN are due to sign a deal aimed at resuming Black Sea grain exports from Ukraine, which have been severely hampered by the war there. Russia's February 24th invasion has stalled exports from Ukraine's ports, leaving dozens of ships stranded and some 20 million tons of grain stuck in silos in Odessa. Moscow has denied responsibility for worsening the food crisis, blaming instead a chilling effect from Western sanctions for slowing its own food and fertilizer exports, and Ukraine for mining its Black Sea ports. However, in July 2022, drone footage revealed that Russia was setting Ukrainian wheat fields on fire, thus putting a massive strain on the country's grain exports and their economy, of course. Those battered and harassed Ukrainian farmers are racing to save their crops from Russian shell strikes. So here we go again, playing the grain game. Let's go back 40 years ago to August 1982, when the Russian grain embargo had been lifted and President Reagan worked to help the American farmer. Due to the embargo, the farmers were suffering. Let's listen.
I've come to tell you that there is a gratitude throughout this country for the work you do and a sensitivity to the burdens you bear. It was Thomas Jefferson who once said that farmers were God's chosen people. Right now, you must be asking, well, chosen for what? As one farmer wrote to me, he said, things are not good down on the farm in 1982, Mr. President. He cited an advertisement in an Iowa paper for a farmhand. There were 140 responses in 2 days, some from people who had been forced to give up their own family farms. A woman wrote me about the day she watched her father-in-law try to auction his land to pay debts, but none of their neighbors could afford to buy. And as she wrote, she said, I sat there and watched a proud old man on the brink of tears. Another, and this shows the spirit out here, had a note on top that was addressed to the aide opening this letter. And she said, I didn't vote for you, I voted for Ronald Reagan, and I want him to read this letter. And I read it. And the lady said, I'm a farm wife, 60 years old, not too well educated, but it doesn't take too smart a person to see and feel what is going on. She said, I know you have lots of things to do and decide, but have you ever stopped and thought about the farmer? Stop and think. Can a farmer pay $75,000 to $100,000 for a combine? Can he pay triple for any machinery? Can he pay the price for fertilizer, seed, you name it, and sell corn, wheat, soybeans for the price they are today? She said that because farmers, just because they aren't out carrying strike signs or tearing something up, doesn't mean they're not hurting. What farmers want, she said, is a fair price so that they can pay their bills and feed their families. But she was only... She was only wrong about one thing. That maybe I hadn't had time to think about farmers. The farmers of America are very much in my mind.
As you know, President Carter, in response to the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, imposed an embargo on the shipment of American grain to the Soviet Union. Although President Reagan supported the idea of sending a strong message of disapproval to Moscow, he suspected the embargo had hurt our American farmers more than it hurt the Russians, because some of our allies had simply stepped in to fill the breach and supplied the grain that the Soviets needed. So he supported the idea of lifting the embargo to help our farmers. But by 1982, the markets hadn't fully recovered, So he took action and he told them, well, let's listen.
The lingering effects of that grain embargo are still hanging over the markets, and our nation's farmers are still suffering from those low prices. We had 70% of the Soviet market when the embargo was imposed. That fell to 25% during the embargo. At the same time, our competitors took advantage of this market that the last administration threw away. Well, we've restored to the American farmer a fair opportunity to export grain to the USSR on a cash basis. We have already begun that difficult road. Last March, I outlined this administration's agricultural trade doctrine. There will be no restrictions on farm products imposed because of rising farm prices. Farm exports will not be singled out as an instrument of foreign policy and can be used only as a part of a trade embargo if it is broad and supported by other nations across the board in a situation that would be so serious as to cause this action. We believe world markets must be freed of trade barriers and unfair trade practices. At home and abroad, we are committed to assuring the American farmer a market that will reward his investment and work and not punish him for his incomparable success. Indications are that we'll sell a record volume of grain to the Soviet Union this year. With the extension that we're now exploring, we will be able to sell large quantities during the next year. In other words, the granary door is open and the exchange will be cash on the barrel head.
And he continued to reassure them.
That cornmeal on the grocery shelves, those soybean products, the steak, milk, bacon, and a myriad of other goods do not mysteriously show up in supermarkets. They were produced at the cost of your sweat and the ache in your back. Most are grown or raised right here in this rich Midwestern soil. You are among the most industrious people anywhere, and you've been carrying an extraordinary burden for the nation and the world. This administration is dedicated to bringing you relief. We believe the unbearable interest rates, the suffocating inflation, the recession that has gripped our land for too many months, was brought about by government leaders who for too long were afraid to trust the American people. They were caused by 40 years of taxing and spending, by disintegrating faith, caused by abandoned promises, and by a reckless course of fiscal insanity that had us careening toward catastrophe. But our goal is to be able to say those days are over. I am proud to report to you, the American people, that the government will no longer forget its fundamental purpose, to be the servant of the people, not your master. You're in charge now. It's your money that is being taxed. It's your property being assessed. Your resources that have been raided by Washington. You have demanded a reduction in the size of government. Well, we have cut its rate of growth nearly in half, and we're just beginning. You've demanded that government live within its means. We're pushing hard for an amendment to the Constitution to balance the budget. You've called for a reduction in repressive tax rates. We passed and are fighting to keep the largest tax cut in American history, but a tax cut that only barely offsets the tax increases already built into the system.
In early 1982, Senator Robert Dole escorted a bunch of angry farmers into President Reagan's office directly as they demanded answers. After the president told stories and got the farmers laughing, he reassured them that he was doing everything in his power to restore their power to earn and prosper. Senator Dole was astonished how happy the farmers were when they left the president's office. And, well, when he addressed the farmers back in Iowa in 1982, he used the same strategy. So after this brief message, we'll come back for some colorful stories from our 40th president, targeted to the sensibility of the American farmer. Get ready to smile. We'll be right back.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to Iowa and the president's remarks. Just before he broke into humor, he laid the groundwork. Let's listen.
It does my spirit good to be among thousands of Americans from our heartland, people with faith in God, the United States, and themselves. And despite the doom criers that are abroad in the land, I believe that most of America shares your faith. I was reminded of this when a group of Future Farmers of America visited me at the White House last week. They were a wonderful group of young people, as you well know. And I told them an old story along that line that maybe you know, but I'm going to tell it again, because life not only begins at 40, so does lumbago and the tendency to repeat yourself.
The president had many favorite stories, but this one in particular is near the top of his list. You can just imagine the twinkle in his eyes as he tells it. Let's listen.
There's an old fellow that had taken over some land down in a creek bottom. It was covered with rocks and brush and was just pretty scrabbly. But he went to work on it, and he worked and he worked, and he cleared away the rocks and the scrub, and he cultivated and he fertilized, and finally, he had a garden that was his pride and joy. And one morning after Sunday services, he asked the minister if he wouldn't like to come out that afternoon and see what he had done, this garden. Well, the reverend arrived, and he was impressed. He looked at the melons, and he said, "I've never seen anything so big. The Lord has certainly blessed this land." And then he came to the corn, and he said, "It's the tallest corn I've ever seen." And he said, "That bless the Lord." And he went on that way about everything he saw: tomatoes, squash, beans, but everything. He was high in his praise of the Lord, and the old boy was getting pretty restive standing there listening to all this. And finally he said, "Reverend, I wish you could have seen this when the Lord was doing it by himself."
He briefly departed from humor and got down to business again. Mike Deaver, his former advisor, said Ronald Reagan never saw a statistic he didn't like. So he's going to go into a little data, which is really quite interesting. You'll hear it, then turned back to working a great story. Let's listen.
With all the miracles of modern-day electronics, there is still no greater technological revolution than modern-day American farming. Today in the United States, one farmer produces enough food to feed himself and 77 other people, 52 Americans and 26 people abroad. Our food and agricultural system is the most productive in the world and accounts for the foundation of 24 million American jobs, almost one-fifth of our nation's total workforce. President Eisenhower once said that without a prosperous agriculture, there is no prosperity in America. He was right. A central goal of this administration is to return profitability and open new markets, especially international ones, to this country's farm sector. Because of your efficiency and the abundance produced on America's farms, we need world markets. The harvest from 2 out of every 5 acres of cropland is sold abroad. You depend on international markets for the sale of more than 60% of your wheat and rice, half of your soybeans and cotton, and a third of your corn and feed grains. In 1970, we exported $7 billion worth of agricultural products. Last year, we shipped abroad more than $43 billion worth of products. These exports account for about a quarter of all farm income. While essential to our U.S. balance of trade, offsetting big trade deficits in other goods, the future of farming has become dependent on maintaining and expanding foreign markets for U.S. food and fiber products. During the 1980 campaign, in a speech I made not too far from here, I promised my personal support for expanding our agricultural exports, and that pledge remains a priority commitment today.
When the president delivered this speech, as you have noticed, he was in Des Moines, Iowa. And in closing, he chose a story that was fitting. Let's listen.
You know, shortly after World War II, I found myself in England. It was during the Christmas season, but I was there to make a picture. It was my first time abroad. And on weekends, wanting to see something of the land, I'd hire a car and driver, and I'd go sightseeing out in the English countryside. And I told the driver I wanted to see some of the old historic places that I'd heard about and been told about. Pubs and inns that were centuries old, just the same as they had been for all those centuries. Toward the end of one such day, we stopped at a pub. It was getting twilight. The driver apologized because this one was only 400 years old. He called it one of the younger ones. The proprietors and the only two people working in the place were an elderly couple. It was very tiny. And the rather motherly-looking lady who was serving us after a while said, and perhaps overhearing us talk, said, you're American, aren't you? Well, I allowed us how I was. And she said, oh, there were a lot of your chaps staged just down the road here during the war. She said, they used to come in here all the time in the evenings and have song fests. She said, they called me Mom, and they called the old man Pop. And as she went on, her voice was softening, and she wasn't looking at me anymore. She was looking kind of beyond into her memories. Her eyes were beginning to fill. And then she said, it was Christmas Eve. The old man and me were here all alone. And all of a sudden the door burst open, and in they come with presents for the both of us. And the tears now had overflowed and were on her cheeks. And she said, big strapping lads they was from a place called Iowa. By this time, my eyes were a little filled also. Maybe some of those big strapping lads she remembered are in this room. Well, neither those big strapping lads, nor their children, nor their children's children, ever needed government to tell them how to bring food for a hungry world from the blue-black soil of this heartland. Here in the land where the West begins, in the state where the tall corn grows, are the seeds of our national renewal. Within our people is the strength, the vision, and the faith that will return prosperity to America. We need only to believe in our own ability to make it happen. On behalf of all Americans, I thank you for keeping up the struggle. We have a long way to go before we set this country to rights, but God has blessed us with a strong spirit and a rich land. With his help and with yours, I know we can do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast, featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.